Okay, welcome everyone for the discussion, weekly discussion. Today also a Tuesday. We have already appointed topic or particular sutta. Along that we are proceeding. Before going to the formal traditional discussion, if anyone is having any comments or any interview reports or something like that, we can take a few minutes and then we are supposed to go to Purabheda Sutta in the Attakavagga Sutta Nipata, very deep area. So before going to that, if anyone is having any fresh thing or reports, please.
Avasarai Bante, we have not received any reports for today's session.
Okay, no reports from Zoom. So if anyone is having, otherwise we are going to go to the Sutta. Okay. I will invite Venerable Buddharakhita to continue with the Upekkhako Sadasato, the next stanza for the discussion. That is, according to my calculation, 4, 6, 8th stanza along the Purabheda Sutta.
Explanation. So Bhikkhu Bodhi translates this as, equanimous, ever mindful, in the world he does not conceive himself to be equal or superior or inferior. For him, there are no swellings. So here, equanimous is the is referring to like the Brahma Vihara. So normally we like to emphasize metta and karuna, but actually the highest of the Brahma Viharas is equanimity. And to be equanimous is to not be moved or disturbed by anything that's happening. And so upeksha is looking on, to look on. And so this means actually an ability to look at whatever object is arising in your mind and not be deflected by it. So in the Abhidhamma, it's described as the mind is that which bends. So rupa doesn't bend. So the body doesn't bend, meaning whatever object is in front of the body, it doesn't bend towards that object or it doesn't deflect away from the body. But it's nama, it is the mind that is bending towards, it is attracted by an object or it is repelled by an object. So equanimity is this ability of the mind to be neither attracted nor repelled by the mind. So this is the meaning of equanimity. So it's an ability to look at an object like eyes wide open, not judging and not liking, not disliking, and not indifferent. Indifferent is the opposite to wisdom. It is ignorance. It is a numbing. It is, ignoring the object. Whereas wisdom is able to look at whatever object is arising and to do so in a balanced and even-minded way. So in the world, he does not conceive himself to be equal. So the world is anything outside of your own skin. So there's the world inside, which is we observe through kaya upasana, and then there are the world outside of our body, so he does not conceive himself to be equal or superior or inferior. So this gets to the heart of atta or anatta. So atta is content. It's the meaning of the word atta is content. Like as in the content of the sentence, the meaning of the sentence. So if you look at a body, it doesn't have any content, any meaning. It's just a jumble of body parts or atoms, and it's the mind that is giving content to the body. That's how this word atta is arising from. It's very interesting when you get down to what is the essence of a human life or a life of any being. You know, what is the difference between materiality and mentality? So even in the modern times, like they think that they can, like for instance, once you have enough neurons or circuits in a silicon, that you can kind of generate consciousness, and that it's just a density of transistors problem. But you know, this assumes that somehow that consciousness is an emergent property of materiality, whereas from my understanding of the Buddhist perspective on this, that mentality is something completely different. So this idea that there is a content as such in that's associated with the body is very important, and that this content does not perceive itself to be equal or superior or inferior. So here, this is conceitedness, and conceitedness is a very primary experience of the world, because we always judge ourselves relative to somebody else, and we do this instantaneously, and it's happening all the time, and it's completely subconscious and immediately happening. You know, we humans, animals, they're always figuring out who's the alpha and, you know, who's superior or who's inferior to me, where's the threat. And this is very important for survival. But spiritually, there is no equal, there is no superior, and there is no inferior. So this is kind of a very, you know, it's a very powerful statement. So what are we if we're not equal, if we're not superior, and if we're not inferior? Well, we're all individuals, you know. So this is an individual. This is an individual. So this is the only thing correct in the world, is that all beings are individuals. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have community or that we don't have relationships with others, but the basic construct is that we are all individual. And again, this would radically differentiate itself from other religions where somehow we're, you know, we've fallen off of the block. We've fallen away from the great unity, the great God, and that we need to find our way back to the great God and become one with the great God. So this idea that that we're individuals is very, very powerful and very fundamental as well. So here we have some of the most fundamental ideas within Buddhism, and also you can see that they're all fundamentally different to other religions and beliefs. So, for instance, love is normally presented as the highest, you know, thing, that we should love God, we should love one another, we should, you know, love ourselves. But here the Buddha tells us to be equanimous. And then intrinsic to a lot of religions is, if you join this religion, you're superior to those who are not from this religion. And so this is a great cause for war and crusades and all sorts of other things, because fundamentally I need to go and missionize, and I need to change these ignorant barbarians. I'm superior because I'm in this religion. Whereas here we're told that he does not conceive himself to be equal or superior or inferior, and that in fact he views himself as individual. So again, this is quite astonishing in many, many cultures. To be an individual is not celebrated or not even emphasized. You're only valued as part of the unit, part of the greater good or greater society or something like that. So for him, there are no swellings. And here, so swelling is referring to like things like pride or conceitedness or swelling because of haughtiness or because of greed or because of aversion. So this puffing up, swelling up, is referring to these, you know, basic interactions with how you perceive yourself in the world. What's your self-perception? And how do you orientate yourself in the world? So here we're looking at, again, right attitude and so there are no swellings, or that there, he is free from swellings. So this is a very profound short statement by the Buddha here, very subtle and very deep, and yeah, you will not find anything like this in any other religion or text. Anyway, Mao Tero, maybe you need more time?
Yeah, that yesterday, the day before, when I go to Kandy, I got a copy of Sutta Nibbata translation from Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi. I think we have a copy in the library also. And I think that book is translated at least 8 people. There's so much of interpretations, because it's an archaic language. Therefore, one gist having so much of shades of meanings, shadows. We are using the Buddha Jayanti. That's a Sri Lankan traditional way of elderly monks how translate. And Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi accept the Sri Lankan translation is the most appropriate, close to the truth. But he is doing his own. So you can see this whole book, this Tripitaka book, this is the standard book. This side is Sinhala, this side is in Pali. So, but this is the interpretation of Bhikkhu Bodhi, and oh, the whole book, which carries 1,500 pages. And translation, translated version of the Purabheda Sutta, 158, not boastful. Is giving a subtitle, because the singer, the Pali says, it says, Upekkhako sadasato na loke manyate samang na visesi na nichayo tasa no santi usada. And that direct translation, it says, sadang upekshayan upekshako uye, anyone is having that equanimity, always is mindful, no one compare with someone. Such a person will never compare with others. As I am equal to him or inferior to him and superior to him. For him, no bumps. There's no swellings. There's no boasting. And for him, I will call, is a peaceful person. So when you are cutting a wood, you see the softwood, the pith, and some knots. So when you have planks, it has some swellings after cutting open. The knots, when you're exposed to the air and water, it bumps. So therefore the planer, the machine you know the carpenter is using, you know, electric planer, the planer we call yatta. So when you put the wood, and then the planer is, the carpenter is a planing. Whatever come up, it will cut off. The usada is the what is coming out. If anything uneven, the planer will even it. And when Jnananda says, Katukurunde, after planing, he has put one ear, one eye closed, and see whether it is level or not. But that means he himself has to put a critical look of his own work, whether I have done the job properly. And if at all there are some bumps, he will keep on planing. And the big bumps gone, small bumps will appear. When the small bumps gone, subtle bumps will appear. Ultimately, if planer is going smoothly and take a ribbon out, chuff, that means this is fit. Then two such plates can put together, they are touching each other. Otherwise, if the bumps are there, they will not give a good touch. And in Sri Lanka, when you go to the Anuradhapura area, they have made water tanks with rocks. Rocks are fit in such a way, they fixed and make a bathtub. No leakage. It's such a, beer barrels made out of wood. Put this thing and put no leakage. So exactly the same. So if we have well plane and if it's touching each other, there is no in-between. But there is no such a people on the earth. They are always having some kind of a boasting and bragging. He says, I am not like you. Or you are better, or I am better. Or I am like you, you are a great person, I am just like you. So therefore you are never independent. And so that independence and the innocence, exactly the same. The boasting and the boasting and the other term, Bhikkhupada is using the for the Ustha, the bragging is a mental sickness. Only that appear when you talk with another person. If you are alone in the forest, even if you have some bragging, even if you have some bumps, even if you have some boasting, you have no chance. Even if you go and say tell a tree, hey guy, you have no consciousness, I have the consciousness, I am going to cut you. The plant will never respond. And you will have, I am a sledgehammer, I am going to break you. And if you go and tell to the rock will not come. But you can't go tell like that in the gold face for the moment. They will fight with you. The people are well blood-boiled people, fighting. So therefore, these people are called upasanta, that means a calm and quiet person. So to put in the simple English, I can't remember the guy, his name, he has written a lot, he's the Trappist monk. He says, as far as you are in a you are innocent, you are in the paradise. Whenever you say, I have a grammar, I have languages and kind of thing, you are deprived of the paradise because you have eaten the apple. Once you've eaten the apple, the God will chase you from the paradise. So now we are with the apple computers. We have all the kind of thing, no simplicity. We have no upasanta. Peaceful situation because we have something to tell someone. I have something to express. I have something to advertise. But, yes, that is true. But after the age 6, we were very innocent. Therefore, it is nothing foreign. And that means that part is our second nature. Now we are not in the second nature, always showing, always attracting, always finding fault with others, always with irritation. So therefore, the moment you come to know you are in an irritation, moment you come to know that you are a fool so far, and you see and you are going to say, you are the bloody fools made me fool, you are my association now, so that means a very clear indication you are mindful. Whenever you are mindful, you know you are in an irritation. Whenever you are mindful, you know you are too late. And whenever you are mindful, it says, my associations are the bloody fellows put me in this trouble and I will make a world, utopia, perfect world. And that is, I deliver a talk to my relatives and one person asked, Bhante, what is the relationship between this arrogance and the mindfulness? Then I told, more soon you become mindful, you become arrogant. And Bachchan Brahm is using it against the mindfulness. That is, in Devata Sangyutta, Tatimato Sadabaddhan, Satima Sukhaseti, Verana Parimunchati. The yakka is telling, O Bhante, whenever you are mindful, you are contented, you are fulfilled, and you are happy, and there won't be any arrogance. The Buddha says, mindfulness is good, auspicious, but arrogance is not answered through mindfulness. So then I told, I am associating with all mindful people, and they are very arrogant, arguing to the sharp to the point. But they are very innocent people. So my task is, leave aside their mindfulness, arrogance, just become a child. just become innocent person. And that is, I call, the higher grades of mindfulness. You are not mindful. Well, you know your unmindfulness. You know, and that cannot be explained through metta, karuna, mudita. That is happening in the equanimity level. So the Buddha given equanimity 10 kinds. This is talk. Upekka ko sadasato, it says chalanga upekka, about upekka regarding the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the dhamma. Or visual objects, sounds, that six senses. But there are other upekka, 10 kinds of upekka. So that is the way they have given the shades of meaning. So therefore, Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, he never used the equanimity in this translation. The stanza is starting with upekkako. But the whole world says you are not an individual, you are a creator. You are a creature. You can't think independent. Then you are arrogant, you are destined to purgatory. So now I am reading in deep how Hinduism going to say they are also appreciating this kind of equanimity, this kind of unassuming quality, and therefore close to the Buddha, above the Buddha, his teaching, their teaching is Hinduism is superior. They are attributing to the upekkha, but still they accept Brahma. That cheating nature, Bhikkhu Bodhi tried his best to understand Advaita, save Buddhists from believing Advaita, because their presentation is such a lucid, but still they are selling Brahma, the selfish self. But here, as he tried to mention, you are independent. You have not realized it. But you are independent. That independence represents till you to become Nibbana through upekkha. It's called Sankhara Upekkha Jnana. Whatever the phenomena it happen, we call Sankhara. Or I would say, whatever the willful action you do, whatever the volitional actions you do, revert back as your karmic force. And they manipulate others, and that manipulation will, you will get manipulated. So all we call volitional activities, all leading to suffering. So Sankhara Upekkha means highest vipassana. Anything happen, you are not carried away, you are not taken for a ride. You can understand, yes, he is against me. He is did it for me. Never mind. I have to see the beginning, the middle and the end. And later again, he will be a good person for another incident. So therefore, don't decide upon. And I would have done something wrong to him. He may be harboring in his mind, therefore I must be patient with him. Like the Sankhara Upekkha is you become the best way of translation. It is Sankhara Upekkha, epistemological suicide. You are suicidal. So artificial intelligence come into being. I say these bloody fellows. Going to make out of muck, going to make this and that, and they are going to make fabulous things. What a foolishness. If they can't sell it, what's the use of it? They are working in the commodity world. And artificial, what does it mean by when you are living alone? So present day, we have to come out of the same mouth. In that sense, artificial intelligence is necessary. But you have to understand the limits. So therefore, understanding I am an independent, I am individual, I would say in our Satipasala, it's our birthright. Now we are so dependent on money, marriages, constitution, media, lawsuits, all the kind of thing, because as far as we are living in the society. Because you can't live, because you are so independent, you are dependent. Our parents made us vulnerable. Our teachers made us vulnerable. Our spiritual masters made us vulnerable. But the Buddha is not falling into these categories. He says, yes, now you are vulnerable because of your craving, because of your volitional activities. And you would have been bragging and boasting and no harm. Through that boasting and bragging, you can understand who you are. Your friends can tell you. all the time you are this and that and kind of thing. So listen to it. And that is the way reflecting each other. So therefore, this sutta never taken for a topic in a Dhamma talks. In my whole life. No one refer to this kind of thing. Because it is hurting the preacher itself. What are the qualifications you have to preach someone? You are also in the same boat. But this sutta is there. That is why many people translate it in many ways. But this Upekkha is going to take, unfortunately, he married to Upekkha. So that is why he misunderstands it. His ex-wife is Upekkha. He thinks he knows Upekkha. If it is so, why he married? Why he become a monk? He would have been with Upekkha. I am more closer to Upekkha than him. It is not a personal attack, but they don't take weapons. I am just telling. So therefore, Upekkha is the most misinterpreted term in Tripitaka. It's 10 shadows. So therefore, I read the best, from my understanding, the best understanding about the Upekkha in a piece of pamphlets written by Venerable Khemananda, and comparing Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upekkha, and the essay on Upekkha, you so balanced he has written. I was a layperson at that time. I helped in correcting in grammar, or printing, how do you call it, proofreading. So I found it's a tackle in such a way, but it is in Sinhala. So therefore, whenever you become Upekkha, you become benumbed. Epistemologically, you are suicidal. So therefore, you are going to have the biggest disappointment. All the others are making appointments. But the Upekkha make biggest disappointment. So have to have a disappointment with the appointment. You have an appointment with the disappointment. That's the way Mahayana Buddhism is putting your whole life in a gist, and it says, have an appointment with the disappointment, you will never get disappointed. Economically we are broken now. Socially we are broken now. Politically we are broken, I mean Sri Lanka. Presently we are under curfew. We are not supposed to have meetings, but no one take care. So even then, we can be Upekkha, we can develop mindfulness, we can have Upekkha. So these things are giving such a lucid disentanglement of these strands, and we can understand how these things are related to my life as well as our lives, and we have to share with it in an impartial way. Telling others whenever the time permits, this is what I know. The Buddha Rakita means this. So I have to tell him. He has to tell me, reflecting each other. That's the way, because my intrinsic nature do not happy to understand my intrinsic nature. So always cheating, always hiding. So we have to either mindfulness as a reflector, or co-practitioners as reflector, or books. Like reflector, the most important term here is usada. Usada means bumps. You have something to tell others. You have something to show others. And that is what we call marketing. That's why advertisement, adverting of your mind to something. So this is what today the most marketable thing. So we being monks, we have to understand the advertising psychology, we have to understand the marketing theory, and we have to see how much we are doing the same thing on the way to our Nibbana, and therefore our mistakes are very innocent. We try our best to refine ourselves. That is what I would like to share, but equally I like to listen to other sounds, other voices also.
Okay, Asabante. I've given some thought to verses like these before as well, talking about not conceiving in terms of inferior, superior, or equal. And because I know people in the world who are very big individualists, and they take that kind of stance very seriously, but they still have a lot of inferior, superior, equal conceits. And so the way that I took these verses were more to mean that, yes, there is individual and it is unique, but they don't grasp at a self in any of it, whether internal or external. And that's why they don't conceive of these things, because they know that whatever qualities there are internally or externally, they're conditioned. And there's no reason to grasp at them for any sort of kind of durable entity that is worth fussing about, and so they don't swell about it. And I was wondering what the Bhantes had to think about that.
What is the gist of? What is? I can't get the gist of your idea.
That the one who is the one who is equanimous and not conceiving in terms of inferiority, superiority, or equality, does so because they have they've stopped conceiving anything internal or external in terms of a self, in terms of an atta. So they would still see.
If I got the idea, I would say there is a foolish equanimity. You are not exposed to others, and you are hiding yourself, and you are telling, "I am equanimous, declared," but without knowing the reason, you are knowing the problem. So that is called anjana upekha. But this one is, you are utterly in the question, you are completely aware of it, but still you maintain kind of an equilibrium without taking this part or that part, like a tightrope walking. So these two upekha, two kinds of upekha, first thing is ajnana upekha. You are just hiding yourself. So that is what people think best, but they are not even exposed to the question. So it is like the forest monks are. They are going to the cave and living there, and they say, "We are enlightened." You don't know what is happening outside, the heat, cold, stiffness, tension, movements, nothing. They completely cover themselves and go. But instead, there may be some other people living in the normal way, once in a way go to the forest caves also, sometimes go to the supermarket also, maintain still a kind of a equanimity, kind of a contentment that is more practical. So these two we are experiencing now. We are forest monks coming from different situation, and we have abilities and facilities to go to completely isolated place. It's an endowment. But once in a way, happily or unhappily, we get engaged in the day-to-day questions. Don't think there is no equanimity. There is. There is no equanimity. Don't think such a person can't have equanimity. I am telling you can. That is what the most dynamic equanimity. That's what the Buddha depicted 45 years. He lived as a human, living in the complete calamitous world, but still maintained. So therefore, those who are completely withdrawn from the society and telling that we are growing equanimity, also they have their own rights. But I don't think it is not a sharpened thing. So once I put there, what is your statement?
What I was trying to say was not that one should go away from the world and not conceive anything within it that way, because even the verse says naloke manyate samang, so it means in the world actually they don't conceive of anything. What I meant was that equanimity comes from possibly the going beyond conceiving a self in anything. So they would still see themselves as an individual, and they would see other individuals, but they wouldn't take any of that to be a kind of lasting, durable thing that is worth grasping at. And so they've seen sabbe dhamma anattati.
So when you become very, very mindful, you start to see that everything is different. You know, so you start to feel kind of an awe and a beauty. And you look around the green forest here, and when visitors come here, it's boring because it's just like a wall of green. And they hear the insects, and they hear just a wall of sound of the insects. You know, they hear the raindrops, and they just hear rain. But if you're very, very mindful, everything is individual, everything is unique, everything is happening in a moment-by-moment basis. And there's a sense of awe and beauty, and it's like an amazing, like childlike moment in everything. So this is the experience, you know. So that's why there is no superior or inferior or equal. Everything is different, everything is unique, everything is momentarily happening. So that's how it's fundamentally getting cut off. So there is no conceiving. It's happening so quickly and so immediately, and it's in a flux. It's in a completely like a river, like it's moving through you all the time. So your rationality is broken down. You can't just say, oh, that leaf is more beautiful than that other leaf. Like sometimes you can be looking at a very ugly, chewed up leaf, and it's very beautiful. You're like, this is kind of ugly leaf, and it's fallen down, and it's old, and it's tired, and it's kind of beautiful. You know, so it's this kind of quality of mind that's happening. But also you need the right view. You need to be told right at the start that we're not the same, we're not inferior, we're not superior as well. You need the right view. So that's where ditti is coming in. And you need the right attitude to cultivate equanimity and to appreciate it and to value it. Like so many people love a drama. They love drama. Why? It's exciting and it's engaging. Like all this peaceful stuff, all this equanimous stuff is all boring. You know, come out to the forest. What's there to do?
We call dramatic giving.
No entertainment. Like, you know, again, like why do people go to protests? It's entertaining. You know what I mean? It's dramatic. It's like action.
Eventful.
And people say to you, have you heard the news? What news? And they're talking about it must be bad. Like they want bad news. Oh, you know that guy, he's such an idiot. He fell over. Oh, yeah, really good. You know, that's good news. Like good news is something bad happens. Like if you say,
No news.
Like I have to say to my mom all the time, no news is good news, mom. Like she'll say to me, nothing much happening. I mean, she's 80 plus, so she's not up to much. And if she does something, you know, you have to say, oh, that's exciting. You know, it's like she went down to the shops. That's exciting. You know what I mean? Like, it's not very dramatic. But I'm like, I'm really happy that you're not suffering any affliction.
Not making news.
No drama. Like, I'm happy that there's no drama. Like, it's peaceful and quiet. So I said, it's peaceful and quiet, mom. You don't have to try to make news out of no news. Like, I'm happy that it's peaceful. But for most people, they want, oh, you know, I did this, I went there, I did this, and I met this person, and they're really cool. Like, you know, that's the opposite, right? So you have to learn to appreciate peace. You have to learn to appreciate equanimity. It's a taste, and it's a very subtle taste. The other stuff is more coarse, you know? It's spicy. It's really spicy. Whereas this is not. It's very subtle. And equanimity is the most subtle flavor. Like love, everybody wants to hear love. Oh, this monk has metta for me. Oh, he's wonderful. This monk has so much compassion. Oh, wonderful. This monk is equanimous. He's as dead as a toad. You know what I mean? Like he
did then gone.
He's like a stone. Like I went, there was nothing. Nothing from that guy. You know, that's terrible.
So that is what happened to me with Godwin.
Yeah, to Godwin he didn't like. He thought he was a vegetable.
Yeah, just vegetable.
A stupid vegetable. He was stupid vegetable, like one of the most learned people. Like Godwin had read, he was a librarian. So his whole life he was reading, you know. Before he was a librarian, he was reading. He got the job as a reader in a library and he read everything. And Dhammajiva thinks he was a stupid vegetable.
So when I go there, he was sitting on a half wall and leaning against the pillar, just waiting. I myself and whenever Dhammika is climbing the this thing, so this is Godwin. What? He's Sotapan. I thought, what is the use of this whole holy life to that? He is a Sotapan, he's just like a vegetable. So I am so dynamic, dramatic, age 26, and blood boiling. I want to have some arahants going on AI and the clairvoyance and every kind. But this guy is just hanging. So after 4 years, I try my best. One day I went with my bike to the Nilambe just to see. I don't expect God in. And he was eating rice in a curd pot, you know, clay pot. seeing me, he was so happy. Please, why don't you come and share with some food? Didn't I to Godwin? It cannot be. It was warm welcome. And he told, you need not to go to the room. You can sleep with me. I know you love you happy books. I have all the kind of books. Anytime you can come. And then I told, it's a completely new door opening. And internally, it's so warm. And once you go, gone, finished. You don't know who you are. So I just wanted to have got to my friend, some kind of relationship. Only once I see him with that kind of thing, and he is the only person chasing behind, and soon I become a monk, first paid respect. It is his hobby. Till that, we were paying respect to him. That he came and paid. So, equanimity.
Yeah, I remember, like, I used to get very frustrated with the three-wheelers. Like, how do you negotiate with the three-wheelers here, you know? And, like, they're very aggressive. And you'd have to take a three-wheeler out to Nilambe and up the hill. It was very, very steep, and it was a lot of trouble.
It's a state mountain.
It was a lot of trouble to get up to Nilambe itself. And, you know, it wasn't just, oh, you know, you go out so many miles and up. But, like, it was troublesome for the driver and...
Many usage of petrol.
Yeah. So if the driver brought you there, like, he was upset because he'd been struggling all the way up this really steep hill, and he wanted extra money, and it was a disaster, you know. But I used to watch Godwin paying the drivers, and it was more like he was more like a sympathetic mother listening to a child crying about, like,
More.
The suffering he had and
more rupees
and Godwin would always pay generously, like but he wasn't a fool either, you know. You couldn't totally rip him off. Like, he obviously knew the price. He was going up and down on the taxi a couple of times a week, but he had this way of, like, listening to the suffering of the driver that I always remember, and he'd pay the agreed price, and then he'd pay a tip on top, and the driver would be quite happy and go off again, you know. It was really an art, like, to watch him in these small interactions, you know. Like, to me, it's the small stuff that is very indicative of a wise person, not the...
So the tea
how
estates,
do they do the big stuff?
Very poor rooms, whole families. Each and every girl... Each and every boy knows Godwin's movements. They just come running to the road. He's having either toffee or something, always give something.
Yeah. And he spoke Sinhalese as well, or Tamil. Like, a lot of Sinhalese don't bother to learn Tamil, whereas he was...
The whole villages are surrounded by Tamils, and they come and help. Fathers come and do gardening and kind of thing, but the young children, anyone wants to go to Kandy, he give a lift. So that's a kind of a rare character, very difficult to measure. Appear like he's have enough money and he can do anything. No, he's entertaining each and every tiny thing with children. And very poor people come and dealing with him. And top class, the world-renowned speakers also comes. And still he accommodates them, climbing up there and making a cup of tea. Kind of a person. He's just a vegetable. Okay. If anyone is having to spare or share. The Thomas Merton I was talking about Thomas Merton. Have you read?
Oh, sorry, yes, a little bit about him, yes. My question was more about equanimity. Is it not... step-by-step process, meaning that at first you need to go in the forest alone and practice, and then step number two or number three, you go and confront yourself into society? Or maybe some people have this ability naturally. I'm asking also this question for my own practice, because being a forest novice, sometimes I want to be more alone to practice, and sometimes also I understand I have to confront with society to see if my practice is actually helping me progress. So I have to confront with society to see if I react better, if I have more equanimity. So is it a learning process step by step, or that's my question. I don't know if you understand.
It's a learning process, but not a linear system. You can from top to the bottom and bottom to the top. It's a reciprocal. So I was born in Buddhist and parents are Buddhist and all kinds. So we have, if I need, I can become a monk and go to the forest and live there and people will respect me like anything. But I was not happy with that. I was completely sensuous pleasure. 26 years. Doing all kinds, but appear to be hermit at home. Because my family members are reputed family. So I did all the nasty things. No one knows. So I'm the dual life. And when I go to Venerable Dhammika, he told, don't just act. Don't write a role model, role play. Just be share with me. He's coming from Australia. He has done drugs and all the kind of thing. When we are sharing, we met both the system. I am coming from ABCD system and he's coming top-bottom system. So I found that people born not with Buddhist background, they may be know about theoretically what is the equanimity and they may be aspiring about living in the forest and all the kind of thing, but still they have to start from ABCD. We in Sri Lanka, we can do anytime ABCD, we never can go to the top because we are poor, we are deprived. So therefore, the top class equanimity is no for us. It is for the next Buddha. Because it is very beyond and it's like a god, it is not human and all the kind of thing. So myself as a young person, knowing they are reciprocal, the mindfulness made the marriage. Mindfulness, choiceless awareness. That's equanimity. Starting as the bare attention, and then you learn in the body, and then the feelings, and the mind, and the ultimately the Dhamma, and going slowly, slowly, power of mindfulness, mindfulness as a factor of enlightenment, and mindfulness as a Eight Noble Path, coming to a steep S-shaped curve, and then flat off. So therefore, this affair cannot be written in a technical language. But taking a language is a linear system. This cannot. But your life is an experiment. It's a life model or role model. So you have to understand in appropriate method whether to go in a ABCD system upward or falling down from the theoretical understanding and living up to that kind of thing. So then you can tell how did you manage. That is practical. That is never written before. That is your own bana, your own interpretation. That's why 15,000 suttas, different people tackle it in a different way. Related to that, the commentators, they give kind of a interpretation. Have you seen the cane vines in the forest? The big cane? Wevel. So on the way to the Dhanasala, above the wire, you have a cane. And the top is robust and full of thorns. But the lower part is, making for furniture. So they are growing sometimes 1 acre, 2 acres. So to harvest them, either you can cut from the bottom and pull it. Because our top part is completely hauled into the canopy. So they put into an elephant and drag it from the middle. Some people cut off the head and then pull it to the middle. Some people cut from the middle and go into the top part and early part because they have been kind of a grabbing to the forest. So therefore you can harvest in accordingly, cutting from top and harvest, cutting from down and harvest, cutting from the middle and harvest to the both the ends. So therefore it is called reciprocal. Very difficult to give a lenient answer. Very difficult to give the line-like answer. So anyway, we are seriously get involved in it. We are living in it. You can't put into a single theory. There's no formula. You have to continue because 10 kind of upekha and we are coming from different cultures, but our aim is the same. Some are coming from the top bottom, sometimes bottom up, but we are meeting halfway. So communication is a problem. Welcome from France. Welcome to Sri Lanka. Example?
You said
think
the communication is a problem.
Communication, problem. But we are doing something, isn't it? Yes?
Asura Bhante, I don't know whether there is sufficient time.
Is yeah, it? You can take, we have about 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, all right. I have.
But I won't give all the 10-15 minutes, I will give a sufficient time.
Okay. Thank you very much, Asurai. And I have basically two questions. One is an academic one and the other is a practical one. Academic one is, you mentioned about Bhante Khemananda's analysis, I think, which is Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and then Upekkha. And as far as I know, Upekkha is coming as a factor for enlightenment. And how does Bhante Khemananda's analysis fit in there? That's the academic one.
Yeah, that I can give you the essay because you can read singular. We published that book before Venerable Jnanarama was passing away, Samasatalis Karmasthana. So I like the Upekkha because gradually you can see Metta Karuna Mudita is addressing partial. But making the theme, ultimately consummating, at the Upekkha, Venerable Khemananda is an aspiring person to become Buddha, not to get enlightened in this very life. You know, Bodhisatta, right? And he is a genuine person. And he explained how the Upekkha can be used for Vipassana or Samatha. Metta Karuna Mudita is more towards Samatha. When you go to the Upekkha, it nullified. Null and void about the Samatha Vipassana. But he has fairly tackled it. So therefore, I found being a traditional monk and handling Upekkha in such a way, kind of a combination. Kind of a communication.
So does it mean that Metta, Karuna and Mudita are automatically cultivated when you come to Samadhi Sambhujanga?
It's exactly as he says. Sometimes you can develop Upekkha directly and understand the function of Metta, Karuna, Mudita. Some people can go along the Metta, Karuna, Mudita and consummate with Upekkha. It depends on the top-bottom or bottom-down method. But tradition says gradually is Metta Karuna Mudita Upekkha. So therefore everyone says you have to cultivate Metta. But he will never go to Upekkha. He will get trapped halfway, lose his character. Before go to Upekkha, let alone Nibbana. So therefore you have to understand Metta is for the Karuna. Karuna is for the Mudita. Mudita is for the Upekkha. Upekkha you can understand inferentially. You can understand the deductive way. It's good that by reading. And then you can understand halfway Metta, Karuna, Mudita. It's have pillars. So top, bottom, both available. And today the artificial intelligence people, they claim like they appreciate Upekkha. But they have not practiced Metta, Karuna, Mudita. Completely lost. They are talking about the Upekkha. And we know Metta Karuna Mudita is the end result. But without Metta Karuna Mudita, if you go to the Upekkha, explorer is an exploiter. He's grab hold everything and they think we are fool. Because they are top class intelligence. I say bullshit. Because not mixed with Metta Karuna Mudita. I am not appreciating Metta Karuna Mudita more than Upekkha. But I am telling it indicates your landmarks. While you are threading the path, landmarks are there. So yeah, they are inferior to Upekkha, but you must have them. That is what the gatha I recited. In Sanghita Nikaya, Devata Sanghita, he used the one, King Bimbisara passed away and he became a yakka. But at the end his son was tortured him. But he was an enlightened being. And his name was, I can't remember. And he comes and says, Bhante, Upekkha, the Sati is giving everything. And you must be Sati. You can tackle the arrogance. Buddha says, Sati is good, everything. But you can't surpass arrogance. You have to have metta. And Venerable Brahman so is telling, that is what I am telling, sati is not everything. You have to have metta. So you can be mindful and practice metta. You can be practice metta and be mindful. Both the ways we have to keep hand in hand.
And the practical question is, when you become at least somewhat equanimous, what happens is you will see your own swellings and deflections. And as a result, you will suffer to a certain extent inside. And which is it? Is it way of understanding suffering?
No, it says, if I got the question, imagine you have a cancer you don't know. All of a sudden you happen to go through a functional MRI scan and they detected a brain tumor. Is that understanding is suffering or not? Some people get cancer due to the understanding. The neighbors also get upset. So far he was with the cancer, he do not know. Now thanks to the MRI, you can say, hey, there's a tumor, maybe malice, so you may be living only 2 months. Oh, then he gets completely collapsed. Likewise, your swellings and your depressions, if you know that knowledge is the one disturbing you, the Upandita Sayadaw's main task is just communicate that. Let us alone, it's the good and the bad. The communication is good because you know aware you have a cancer. You think it's a blessing not to know. Even though you have a cancer, if you do not know, you may be still smoking and running and play hell. But that knowledge, the Buddha says, knowledge is always give some correction, give some restraint. Therefore, irritating, fault-finding, self-accusating. And why people can't live perfectly, all the kind of nonsense. Life is not a perfect thing. But understanding your own swellings, understanding your depression, is just you are in just front of a life-size mirror. You can see yourself. People are so frightened. That's why we have to be friends. We have to tell directly, hey, darling, I know your game. Never mind. Don't play it as a reality. It's a game. Please, if I am also playing to you, I invite. Please, let me know. Because direct telling may be irritating me. But anyway, what is the use of otherwise our friendship? We have to tell each other, just counseling, just like a free association. And the mindfulness is the internal colleague. External also we can have is as far as we are mindful. So we are not critical. We are, in the sense, we are not destructively critical. We are critical constructively, but our mind hardly understands destructive criticism and the constructive criticism. For that, someone has to guide. So the suttas and others given enough guidance, but it's a little irritating. Just like understanding, and once the doctor says cancer, there are 5 stages. First, he become angry. Why me? I have done all the medical studies and time to there, but still, he says doctor is wrong, machine is wrong, something. So go to the other door. He also says ultimately is compromising. Maybe then. Accepting and full depression. After accepting only, medicals are going to work. Till that, he is refusing, rejecting. The medication won't work. So death also the same, 5 stages. You are each and everyone's ussada, the swellings and bragging is the same. Soon someone tell who you are to tell me that mind your own business. Before I go to Burma, when Dhammanisanti came and Bante, he was senior but not high ordained. I am ordained 2 vasa or 2-3. Then he says, you are highly conceited. You are very proud. Directly telling, irrelevant. Because I was a graduated person, ordained. He was not. But I know he is not telling to tell find fault with me, but I don't accept it. You are not my upajaya, you are not my preceptor. Mind your own business, by any way expressed it. Then I told, please let me know what are the character, how can I tackle? I don't know, but be careful about conceit. Okay, that's fair enough. But still appear like he is doing unwanted thing. So I went to Venerable Jnananda and he says, good that someone has seen, and even if you can't explain and give the remedy, that observation. But unless otherwise, that observation itself is irritating us. Who the hell is a samanera? How can he find fault with the senior monk's life? But if we are humble enough, our children, our pet animals, plants, they are showing us our swellings. So you must be very, very sensitive to hold, have it. This is a blessing. So therefore, it's a blessing in disguise. So I will put it in this way. Maybe I'm talking too much. When you are practicing mindfulness, maybe with the breath, what are the distractions happens to you indicate who you are. That's a diagnostic. So write all the distractions and see there are patterns. You are not studying them because you think it is a mistake. No, it is not a mistake. It's a higher level of, top level of mindfulness indicating your own, obsessed or underlying tendencies. Very difficult unless otherwise you are receptive. America?
Again, I would like to emphasize, like, there's two aspects to equanimity. One is the practice, and then the other time is like where you run into it in terms of views. And like most of the time, for instance, in the forest, nothing much is happening as such. You're not having likes and you're not having dislikes. So actually, most of the time, you're in a kind of an equanimity, and it's just the quality of your awareness of the equanimity. That's the only difference, and whether you value it or not, you enjoy it or not. You get a kind of pity or a sukha from that equanimity, from that neutral kind of bland state that we live in here in the forest. You know, like we don't have anything provoking us positively or negatively. So our life is mostly nothing much to say, nothing much. So this nothing much is the equanimity. So most of the time we have equanimity. We just don't value it. We don't elevate it. We always talk about I like or I dislike. We don't talk about like normal. We don't talk about bland or no problem, no hassle, no news. We don't value it. But most of the time we have equanimity actually. But we just don't... appreciate it or... We don't value it, or we don't give it the attention, or we don't give it the importance. You know, instead we're always looking for good, bad, but not in between. But most things are actually in between. And we just don't value it. Like, it's an insult to say to somebody that you're normal. What do you mean I'm normal? Like, I'm not special? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you're normal, you're average. You know, that's an insult to people. So it's valuing being normal. That's the hard part. And, you know, to really value it. Like, we know we always want to be superior in some ways, or we have some issue, we have inferiority, you know, we're sort of swinging. But that in between, like the conceited side of equanimity, this indifference or stupidness, like, is what I would call delusional, is where we're all the same. We're not all the same. We're all completely different. Every leaf is completely different in the forest here. So deluded is like, we're all the same. No, we're not all the same. We're all completely different. So then it's like, well, if we're all different, who's better and who's worse? No, we're all equanimous. We're all equal. You know, it's this paradox. So it's just living with bringing the mind into like a state of awareness of that. That is the equanimous state. And that's cultivating the equanimity as a practice and appreciating it, you know. And like years ago when I met Dhammajiva in Australia, I said to him about like that it was like appreciating boredom. And he really didn't like it at that time. I think you've picked it up on it since. But at the time, it was like an insult, like to appreciate boredom, you know. This is almost like the quality of equanimity, you know, cultivating. Like, so most people, like, hate boredom. They hate it. It's the most, you know, we prefer anger. We prefer hatred to boredom. We you know, all these words that we have, like insipid, not interesting, dull, like water, like air. But actually, these are the fundamental substrate. And you have to learn to value it or give attention to it and grow it. You understand? And then that becomes like the ballast. That becomes like the where you return to all the time. When, sure, you'll get excited and you'll get, you know, depressed, but you come back to this equanimous, you come back to the center, and that becomes your main ground. And you value it. You know, you go out and it's all lights and in the town and it's like exciting, and you kind of go, ah, this is drama, I don't want it anymore, you know. Or you come back from a very difficult situation, you know, where it was tiring and taxing, and you come back to normal where it's not tiring and taxing, but it's not exciting either, you know. But you value it. You come into the forest and it wraps around you, and it's cool and it's calm, and it's, you value that. You know, but you'll see other people, they come here, all the guests, they come here a week, 2 days, 3 days, gone. Why? Nothing, no excitement, no news, no nothing interesting. You know, why did they go? You know, all these yogis who come from all over the world, this is the best center in the world, and 2 days later they're gone. Like, well, what happened? Did somebody insult him? No, it was like boring. Oh, I want to go down to the beach. I'm going to sit on the beach instead and watch the sunset. You're like, it was boring, you know? So having the mind very interested, where it's not dull, or it's not an exercise in boredom, but it's like it's alive, and it's interesting, and it's different, and it's unique, you know? But it's normal, and it's average, and it's the same, you know, in other ways. Like, that's it. It's just that practice, you know, of everything here all day, every day. And just coming back to the breath, coming, like the breath, the most boring thing in the world. Like, how could that be interesting? Right? But it is interesting. You know, it's quite astonishing. If you're very mindful of the breath becomes very interesting. Why? You know, that's the equanimity. You know, this is like cultivating equanimity, then pity, sukha, samadhi, all these factors start to arise. This comes back to your question about equanimity as being a bojanga, as a factor of enlightenment. So it's very natural. It's very natural. But then philosophically, you also have to have equanimity as well. Like when that you have to know where the center ground is, and when people are pulling you in some direction through, you know, through their defilements or through your own interactions, like Mahatera was also saying, then you learn about your traits. Oh, I have anger tendency, or I have delusional tendency, or I have greed tendency. Some people are just like really greedy, you know? They want robes, they want better this, that, and the other. Like in one of the commentaries, they give a lot of discussion that this is all about sila, and it's about the monk's life. So, and it's like... Or in the next one, maybe it is, like we start to talk about gain and not gain. What's gain? What's not gain? It's like getting robes. Like people are greedy. Like, you know, you see somebody who like they always want some better robe, but that's their greed behavior. And if they see that and can develop equanimity towards that, then they're free. They start to become free from that thing, and that's wisdom arising, right? So I'm just trying to say to you, like, this upeka is not a mysterious quality, and it's not a philosophy, or it's not an ideology. It is a practice, and it's momentarily arising, and it's there all the time, and as well as the philosophical side to it.
Okay, we are going to end. So this part is written in canon as viraga. Viraga means not attractive. Raga is attractive. So virago setto dhammana. Among the all dhamma, viraga is the best. That means you must understand your datum line and then live up to that. Okay, we are going to end the discussion today. Thank you very much for the participation.